Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Melina, for welcoming people. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Metastatic Melanoma Treatment Update. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many cancer organizations. And it is because of that collaboration that we have been able to reach so many of you on the call today. And we have on the call today over 426 participants. So there's many of you from all over the United States, from all different states and regions of this country, and from big cities and little cities and rural areas as well. We also have international participants from Australia, Canada, East Africa, Nairobi, Korea, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world and are truly a group of information seekers. Now, today's program has been made possible by a charitable contribution from Bristol-Myers Squibb, and I really want to thank them for their support of the program today. I would like to turn your attention for a moment to the materials you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is an outline that speakers have prepared. There also is information about all of the different collaborating organizations. Really, as a resource for you, they all offer free services. Now, there also is an evaluation form. And I would ask you to take a moment at the end of the program today and complete that evaluation form. When you think about it, who but each of you can best tell us the programs you would like us to offer? Indeed, the program today was a recommendation that many of you had made, and we are now offering that program. So we take to heart your recommendations and try very hard to implement them. We have wonderful speakers today. I want to start by introducing our first speaker is Dr. Jed Walchuk. Dr. Walchuk is Director, Immunotherapy Clinical Trials. He's Associate Director of Ludwig Center for Cancer Immunotherapy. He's Associate Attending Physician, Melanoma Sarcoma Service. He's also Associate Director, Medical Oncology Hematology Fellowship Program, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And he is also Associate Professor of Medicine, Weill Medical College of Cornell University. As you can see, Dr. Walchuk wears many hats, and we're really delighted to have him with us today. He is going to address an overview of metastatic melanoma, standard of care, new treatment approaches, and the role of clinical trials, and managing side effects and pain. Dr. Walchuk?
Thank you very much, Dr. Messner. It's really an honor to be able to participate in this very important event, and I'm particularly grateful to also have my colleague from Memorial Sloan Kettering, Dr. Mario Lacouture, as the other speaker. This is a very important and timely topic that we're discussing today, which is the treatment of metastatic melanoma. And I will get into a little bit more about why it's so timely very shortly. To just review a little bit about melanoma, it is one of the three kinds of skin cancer, and it is the one that has the highest likelihood of becoming metastatic. Fortunately, because of the hard work of dermatologists, and organizations like the American Cancer Society to raise awareness about melanoma, many cases of melanoma in the United States are diagnosed at a very early time and therefore cured with simple outpatient surgery. However, there are some patients, up to 20%, who will have the development of metastatic disease, and that treatment historically has been challenging. However, what I'm going to tell everyone about today is that finally science is catching up with the medical need and providing important clues as to how we can treat melanoma much more effectively, both using targeted inhibitors of important pathways inside melanoma cells that have been found to have been mutated or gone wrong, as well as novel ways to try and use the immune system as a tool to treat melanoma. The standard therapies before last week to treat metastatic melanoma were in the United States consisted of two drugs. One, a standard chemotherapy called dacarbazine, or DTIC, which is not a new drug. It's been around for over 30 years. And dacarbazine results in shrinkage of melanoma tumors in somewhere between 5 and 15% of people who receive it. There was really not a lot of evidence that this caused a durable benefit for many patients, but for a small number, it did provide a temporary benefit in terms of making tumors smaller. And with the development of modern anti-nausea medicines, the side effects of dacarbazine are quite easy to control. The other medicine that was approved for melanoma in 1998 is a drug called high-dose interleukin-2, which is an immune system hormone that is a growth factor for T cells, which are a kind of immune cell. And high-dose interleukin, or IL-2 as it's called, results in a meaningful, durable regression of metastatic melanoma in about 3 to 5% of patients. This 3 to 5% of patients treated with IL-2 who have these durable regressions really can be considered cured because the remissions last over 10 years. The difficulty and challenge with high-dose IL-2 is that it does have some serious side effects, including lowering blood pressure and causing kidney problems, which necessitate that it be given in the inpatient setting in a hospital, usually in an intensive care unit or cardiac monitoring unit kind of setting. So with those sorts of significant side effects and the small number of patients who benefit in that durable way, clearly the treatment of metastatic melanoma represents an unmet medical need. And until very recently, there have not been any new drugs that have been shown to improve overall survival. However, in the past few weeks, we have taken very important steps forward in the development of better therapies for melanoma that really offer the possibility of increased hope for the control of this disease. I'd like to divide the remainder of my time into two areas as I discuss the new treatments for melanoma, the first being treatment of the tumor itself and then treatment of the patient's immune system. So in talking about treating melanoma cells, we have become aware that over 50% of people with melanoma have a genetic change or a mutation in the melanoma tumors in a gene called BRAF, that's spelled B-RAF. And this change, again, is present in about 50% to 60% of melanomas. And we know that this change results in increased cell division or proliferation of the melanoma cells. And so once this was identified, based upon the work of the Cancer Genome Project about 8 years ago, various different drug companies and research laboratories set about to identify inhibitors of BRAF. And in the past several months, we've become aware that one of these BRAF inhibitors, which is now called vemurafenib, it used to be called PLX4032, results in improvement in overall survival of patients with melanoma who have the BRAF mutation in the tumor compared with patients who got dacarbazine chemotherapy. Now, we don't know how much the benefit is yet, but we know that it's a benefit. And we also know that the benefit is really limited to the 50 to 60% of people who have this BRAF mutation. So that's a very important point now, that treatment of melanoma needs to be considered personalized medicine. And the first step in determining what a good treatment is for an individual patient now has to include an examination of the genes in the tumor specimen, the biopsy specimens from patients with metastatic melanoma. So the BRAF mutation, when present, will result in about a 60 to 70% chance of drugs like vemurafenib causing a significant regression, often happening within days to weeks after the drug is given. And vemurafenib is one BRAF inhibitor. There's another one from a company called GlaxoSmithKline and several others in development. But the vemurafenib is the most advanced in terms of clinical testing. One of the challenges with drugs like vemurafenib that target the tumor cells is that even though they cause very rapid regressions of the tumors in the majority of patients, these tend not to be very long-lived. The average time that these regressions last is somewhere around 7 months or so, and then the tumors become resistant to the drug, and other therapies need to be started. So the important take-home message from this discussion of therapies that target the tumor is that knowing what the genetic changes are in the tumor is very important, and that the response, meaning the tumor is getting smaller, can happen very quickly but may not last for more than several months. So we still have some work to do despite this important step forward. Now, there are other drugs that target the same pathway that RAF is in. They interfere with another protein called MEK, M-E-K, that are being combined with the RAF inhibitors to try to improve the durability of these responses. And so we look forward to the results of those clinical trials. And I'll use this opportunity to emphasize the importance of patients participating in clinical trials for two reasons. First of all, it is, you know, one of the only ways to get access to new experimental drugs that hold promise in our fight against melanoma. And second, that it is the only way that we will continue to make progress is by examining the effects of new drugs. The side effects of these RAF inhibitors can include some changes in the skin, which I'm going to ask Dr. Lacouture to address during his portion of the program. But it can also include joint pains and also some other kinds of skin cancer, which Dr. Lacouture will talk about. In general, most people can take the medicines without significant difficulty, but some people need to have a dose reduction because of the joint pains if they don't respond to standard anti-inflammatory medications. Now, to finish our discussion of new medicines for the treatment of melanoma, we're going to talk not about drugs that target the melanoma directly, rather about drugs that target the immune system and cause the patient's immune system to actually convey the therapeutic effect. The first drug I'd like to talk about is called ipilimumab, and it now has a commercial name called Yervoy, and it was just approved by the U.S. FDA late last week. So we hope that ipilimumab will be available through any oncologist in the next several weeks for treatment of patients with metastatic melanoma in either the first-line setting or after another drug has been tried. Now, ipilimumab, again, is a drug that doesn't treat the melanoma directly. It causes activation of the immune system, and then the immune system goes and does the heavy lifting of treating the melanoma. As such, some of the side effects of ipilimumab can look like an immune reaction to normal tissues in the body as well as an immune reaction to the melanoma. The side effects that we see most commonly are itching of the skin and a very faint rash, which is easy to control. And again, I will defer to our real expert, Dr. Lacouture, to talk about those side effects. But one of the side effects that we worry about the most is diarrhea, which can progress to become colitis or inflammation of the intestines if it is not treated quickly with medicines like prednisone. We know that picking up the symptoms of colitis early are very important, because if they're not picked up early, they can lead to serious consequences like perforation of the intestines, which can sometimes lead to death if it is not treated very rapidly. Now that we have a lot of experience with ipilimumab in treating thousands of patients over the past 6 years in clinical trials, we have very simple ways to control this diarrhea, and we no longer have difficulties, at least at our center, with patients developing perforations of the intestines or other serious side effects. There are rarer side effects, which include abnormalities of certain glands in the body, like the pituitary or the thyroid gland, as well as sometimes elevation of liver function tests, which similarly can be treated with drugs like prednisone. So as I said, ipilimumab was just approved by the U.S. FDA. It should be available throughout the U.S. In the next several weeks. And my colleagues and I look forward to educating community oncologists in the best way to use this new medication. Ipilimumab was actually the first drug ever to be shown to extend survival in metastatic melanoma. It just about doubled the number of people alive at 1 and 2 years compared with a vaccine used as a control. In addition, there's going to be data presented at a large oncology meeting in June showing that the combination of ipilimumab with the chemotherapy drug dacarbazine caused better survival than dacarbazine alone in another large study. So we look forward to those results being made public as well. And in addition, there are other immune modulatory drugs in development. Another drug which doesn't have a tongue-tying name yet, called MDX1106, which interferes with another immune marker called PD-1 that is also showing some promise in melanoma. Now, we talked a little about managing the side effects of these different drugs, and I know one of the other topics that I wanted to touch on is management of pain, and this is always very important to take into consideration. I tell my patients that pain is not something that I tolerate. So if patients have pain, it's very important that they bring this to my attention. We are very lucky here at our center to have a team of pain management experts to guide us in the use of the most effective pain regimens. We are very, very eager to try to help out with pain control. And so often patients worry about treating pain with strong medicines that may cause addiction, but we do not worry about that. We think that the alleviation of pain is a number one priority, and so people should not be scared about addiction. So I think that that takes me to about exactly what my time frame was, and I'd like to now hand the program over to my colleague, Dr. Mario Lacouture, from the Dermatology Service here at Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Walchuk, for just a really outstanding presentation, so informative and comprehensive. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you, and it's just really good to hear all this pioneering new work that's occurring and new things that are available in the field of metastatic melanoma, so thank you so much. Our next speaker is Dr. Mario Lacouture. He's Associate Attending Physician, Department of Dermatology, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Lacouture is going to address the role of the dermatologist in the care of your skin during treatment for metastatic melanoma. He will also talk about some of the side effects in terms of affecting your skin. He'll talk about how to manage those. He'll talk about communicating with your healthcare team about quality of life concerns. And also he'll address skin care and sun safety tips for you and your family. Dr. Lacouture?
Thank you, Carolyn. And I would like to thank Cancer Care and all of you participating in our program today for taking the time to listen to some of the very important aspects of melanoma treatment as well as side effects. I am involved in the treatment of dermatologic or skin, hair, and nail side effects that occur to anti-melanoma therapies. And I have been very involved with Dr. Wolchuk's team in the treatment of side effects to some of the most novel treatments that are available today until recently in clinical trials. But as we have just heard in Dr. Wolchuk's outstanding presentation, we now have one of the newest drugs available for use in the world in general. I would like to first mention that the dermatologist's role in the treatment of melanoma is important for two reasons. The first reason is that the dermatologist will play a pivotal role in the management of the side effects that we have just heard can occur in about a third to half of patients. I will be going over the details as to what are the most common side effects that occur with these new drugs in a few minutes. But also it is important to keep in mind that melanoma places people at a higher risk for developing subsequent melanomas or other types of skin cancers. Therefore, it is important for people who have been diagnosed with melanoma to be followed by a dermatologist within the first 2 years of diagnosis, approximately every 3 months, and then this time can be spaced out into every 6 months for subsequent few years, and then every year people with melanoma should have a general skin exam. So those are the two most important aspects in which a dermatologist would play a major role. So in terms of the dermatologic side effects that can occur with therapy, it is very important to keep in mind that depending on what treatment is utilized for melanoma, the side effects will be completely different, as Dr. Wolchuk has mentioned. And let's start by talking about the most exciting new development, largely of which took place here, which was the development of this new drug, ipilimumab, which was only approved last week. This drug, as was mentioned, activates the immune system and as such can make any skin problem that may be existing before, such as rosacea or redness of the face, dry skin, or itching of the skin, become worse during treatment. But I don't think people really need to be concerned about this because of everyone we have treated and most people that develop these types of side effects with early intervention, close follow-up, the treatment with the appropriate medicine such as creams, oral antihistamines, we are able to manage the itch and the rash that occurs in about 35% and 58% of patients respectively. So with ipilimumab, about a third of people will develop itching of the skin, only a small minority of which will impair their activities of daily living, such as sleeping and doing their daily activities. And the rash occurs in about 58% of people, but this rash is really considered by most people who have the rash to be insignificant, as it usually affects only the lower legs and the forearms, and it's really not affecting their quality of life. So treatment is important to tell the dermatologist that may be following someone treated for melanoma. When these side effects do occur, as they can indicate that the rash or another side effect may be appearing. And also another interesting side effect that occurs with ipilimumab, as we have just heard, activates our immune system, is lightening of the color of the skin, so the skin may become whiter, because this drug activates the immune system to attack the pigment-forming cells, some of which are the melanoma cells, and also will make your hair lighter. And these are not considered to be significant side effects, but may occur at any time. So it is important to keep in mind to tell your doctor, your oncologist, and maybe your oncologist works with a dermatologist who can address these issues. So what can you do before starting treatment with ipilimumab or any other therapy to minimize the risk of these side effects? Well, importantly, what you need to do is to minimize the injury that can occur on the skin. One of the most common causes of injury of the skin is both the dryness and ultraviolet radiation coming from the sun. In terms of dryness, it is important to note that dry skin occurs when the top layer of the skin becomes dehydrated. This often happens during the winter months when the humidity is low and the air is dry. Older people may have dry skin all year, especially on the legs. Itching, importantly, often also accompanies dry skin. So the treatment involves rehydrating the skin and adding moisture to the environment. So one of the ways to minimize this is to keep the air in your home moist by lowering the heat. Take short baths or showers with warm or cool water every day or every other day. Showers must be kept brief, and do not soak in a tub for a long time. Some soaps may be harsh on your skin, so use gentle soaps. Very smelly or fragrance-full soaps are not the best for your skin, as they have very harsh fragrances. Also, apply a moisturizer right after leaving the shower, ideally within 15 minutes, while your skin is still damp. When you dry your skin, pat it dry and don't rub it, or use a loofah or a sponge in the shower. Use heavy and thick creams or ointments instead of using lotions, as these may contain alcohol. Reapply your moisturizer at bedtime, and protect your skin from winter weather. Wear hands and gloves when outdoors. Also, it's important to avoid direct contact with fabrics such as wool or angora. These may irritate your skin. So wearing clothing made of 100% cotton and then layer it with woolen clothes is ideal. The moisturizers, when going outside, should contain a sunscreen. Sunscreens should be applied 2 hours before leaving your home and 2 hours thereafter. Sunscreens with an SPF, or sun protection factor, with a number 30 or above should always be used. If you want to see what the ideal sunscreen is, just look in the back of the tube. It is easy to get confused with hundreds of sunscreens in every drugstore or website that you may be looking. So just look in the back of the tube, and you will see that some sunscreens have two ingredients that are to be used, either zinc oxide or titanium dioxide. These are ideal because they protect against all types of ultraviolet radiation. When you apply these, also try to wear hats or protective clothing. Remember that a white cotton t-shirt will only give you a sun protection factor of about 7. So even if you are wearing a white t-shirt, it is important to apply sunscreen and apply it every 2 hours or so. The frequency of this application should increase if you are either running or doing activities that involve sweating or getting into the pool or any other type of water. Now, with other drugs that can cause different types of side effects, I would like to mention two drugs that Dr. Wolchuk already discussed in detail, the first one of which are known as the RAF inhibitors. These drugs have currently been evaluated in numerous clinical trials, and they are noteworthy for their rapid responses that they do cause in people, but also because they cause a rash affecting the face and upper body of about 40% of people that use these drugs, which can be very itchy. It is associated also with a slight tenderness in the hairs of the scalp, which can be easily treated with topical shampoos or lotions containing topical anti-inflammatory medicines. But importantly, what these drugs have also been known for in terms of affecting the skin is because they can cause another type of skin cancer. But don't worry, these other types of skin cancers really are not the life-threatening type of skin cancers and should not usually affect the administration of the RAF inhibitors. When these other types of skin growths do occur, what we tend to do is just remove these, and they tend not to come back. So with these drugs, aside from these secondary skin growths, it is also important with the RAF inhibitors to use sunscreen, as these drugs may make you more sensitive to the burning rays of the sun. So using sunscreen, as has been mentioned previously, is critical with the treatment of melanoma with RAF inhibitors. And finally, another drug that is very exciting because has shown remarkable results but works in a completely different way, as has been mentioned before, is drugs that block or inhibit a protein known as MEK. These drugs are noteworthy because in the skin, they affect the normal growth of the hair follicles as well as the skin cells, so they cause several types of side effects. The most important one is an acne-like rash that affects the face and upper body. It tends to occur in about 45% of people, but there are effective ways of mitigating this side effect by using oral antibiotics that are commonly used in people with acne. By doing so, we are able to reduce the frequency of this rash with MEK inhibitors in about 50%, or decreasing it by almost half. So it is important when starting any of these medicines to consult with your oncologist and ask them if the drug that you may be receiving is associated with dermatologic side effects, so that then your oncologist can set you up with a dermatologist that can follow these and allows the oncologist to focus on the most important objective, which is treating melanoma. Overall, the majority of these side effects, I have to say, from our experience here, are manageable, and people are very happy with treatments against side effects and also with the benefits that they can obtain from these medicines. So thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to questions at the end. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Lecatour, just for an excellent presentation and just so helpful in terms of just coping with the side effects and skin issues. So thank you so much. And I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. We now do have time for questions. We have a lot of time for questions. I'm going to ask Melina to bring all of our speakers on board and also to explain to the audience how to queue up for questions. And I also want to say that, you know, the questions are a chance for you to ask a question. Our speakers, of course, will provide you information in a general format because they're not able to provide a direct consult to you. And the information they provide, of course, isn't really, it can't be construed as medical advice in terms of your specific situation. But we ask you to take the concepts that they and the information they provide and bring that back to your treating healthcare team so that you then can have a plan worked out that's tailored to your best needs. So that we hope that you'll take what you learn here, bring it to your healthcare team, and really they can best tailor the care to you. With that being said, Melina, could you explain to the audience how to queue up for questions? And all of our physicians are here, and we'll take as many questions as possible.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered and you wish to remove yourself from the queue, you may press the pound key. Our first question comes from Joel N.
Yes. Hello. How are you?
Good. How are you, Joel? What's your question?
But I have a question. The new drug, Ipi, I'm wondering how it interfaces with people who have autoimmune illnesses.
Excellent question. Thank you for that question. I'm going to ask Dr. Walchuk to address that question.
That's a really great question. Thank you for asking it. We have actually excluded patients with significant autoimmune disease from all the clinical trials of ipilimumab because the problems that it creates very much resemble autoimmune disease. So my feeling going forward is that anyone who has significant autoimmune disease, aside from vitiligo, which is a lightening of the skin caused by an immune reaction, should not be treated with ipilimumab.
Thank you. Thank you for that thoughtful question. Oh, okay, our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Linda V.
Hi, thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Is there a difference between metastatic and malignant melanoma, and are the treatments different?
That's a great question. Yeah.
Dr. Walchuk, would you address that?
Sure, I'll do it. That's a really important distinction to make. They are very different. Malignant melanoma is a very general term that could be applied to either just the primary cancer arising in the spot on the skin or if it disseminates to other part of the body. Metastatic melanoma is more specifically used to describe melanoma that has spread from the site where it started to a different location in the body.
Thank you. All right, excellent. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Deborah S.
Yes, thank you, doctors. I have a question about the difference between the IL-2 treatment, which apparently was very difficult to endure and only affected a small quantity of patients, and the new drug that also affects the immune system, Ervoy, and I can't pronounce, is it Ipilimumab? Sorry.
Yeah, Ipilimumab, but I get a lot more practice saying it than you do.
Yeah, it's a great word. Yeah. Ervoy was, I think, one of the drug company names for the new approved FDA drug. But obviously they must be affecting the immune system differently. Is there something that you can explain that doesn't go into great clinical detail about the differences?
Really, really important point. Thank you for asking it. You know, the IL-2 is a growth factor. It just makes T cells divide more. These are immune cells. It makes them divide more, and it also kind of changes some of the molecules on their surface. Ipilimumab, or Yervoy, functions by disabling a braking mechanism on T cells that allows them to become more activated than they otherwise would. The end result, actually, is, you know, the same idea of causing immune activation, but how these two drugs go about it is different.
Thank you very much. All right. Our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Hillary J.
Yes. I was told that when somebody wanted to participate in a clinical trial, when they're in remission, that's not possible. The second drug you were talking about, which is treating the immune system, would somebody who's in remission be a candidate for such a clinical trial?
Well, these are excellent questions. I'm going to ask Dr. Walchek and also Dr. Lakatora to address this as well. Dr. Walchek, do you want to go first?
Yeah, so just to give the example for ipilimumab, ipilimumab is being offered in a clinical trial right now to people who have just had surgery to remove melanoma and don't have any melanoma left but have a significant risk of it coming back, and that's judged based on what's found at the time of surgery. But that time frame for when people are eligible is just about 3 months from the time of surgery. So when people talk about being in remission, that can be, you know, a month later or it could be 5 years later. So depending upon, you know, what the particular clinical trial is, it may allow for people to be enrolled after surgery if there's a significant risk of the disease coming back. But if you're talking about being out from a diagnosis of melanoma for years, then it's very unlikely that any experimental drugs would be offered because the chance of the melanoma coming back is so low.
And Dr. Could you just a comment on just clinical trials in general, so people understand about clinical trials?
Yes, I think clinical trials are very important because they provide access to drugs that would not be available otherwise. And also, I have to say that at our institution, in which many people are under clinical trials, I ask many people how they feel about it, and actually they are very happy because they know that when they are on clinical trials, there are so many people, including the doctors, the research nurses, the research assistants that are following them, that they feel that they are cared by so many people and so carefully that they are very happy to be in clinical trials. So I feel very strongly that it is a good way to go if one were to need treatment.
Awesome. Thank you. Okay, our next question. These are really wonderful questions. My next question, please.
Our next question comes from Sharon G.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for all of your time here. My question is in regards to the BRAF. I'm on that study right now with Plexxikon, and it looks like I might be showing some progression. If I was to add the MEK inhibitor to it or either switch to the GSK, BRAF, and MEK clinical study that is out? Is that possible? Would that be a choice or an option for me?
So I want to thank you, Sharon, for that excellent question. So I'm going to ask Dr. Walchuk to address your question in a general way, and then we're going to ask you to, of course, take that information and discuss that, of course, with your treating healthcare team. But in, Dr. Walchuk, can you just address the question or the concepts in a general way? Thank you.
Yes, yes. So I think that, you know, a lot of physicians and investigators in this area are hoping that the addition or substitution of a MEK inhibitor will help with resistance to the BRAF inhibitors. So if there are clinical trials that are available to people who have resistance to BRAF inhibitors that would offer the MEK inhibitor either in combination or instead of the BRAF inhibitor, I think those would be reasonable trials to consider.
Thank you. Okay, our next question, please.
Our next question comes from Marcia D.
Hi. My question is kind of twofold. I had surgery on the 22nd of January for a sinonasal mucosal melanoma. They said stage T4A, no mets, no nodes. And I'm going to undergo palliative radiotherapy because they said it was in all my left side sinuses. But you were talking about clinical trials within 3 months of surgery. Do you think I would be a candidate for that? I'm non-BRAF, non-CKIT.
Okay.
Thank you for that question. And we're going to, again, address it in a general way.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a great question, too. Right now, the folks with primary melanomas in the mucosal surfaces are not eligible for the ipilimumab randomized trial.
And are there other trials that might be occurring?
It's very hard to know because there are a lot of small studies opening and closing. In this setting of studies done after surgery to remove a melanoma, there's this one large study going on with ipilimumab. There's another large study from GSK using a MAGE-3 vaccine, which I think requires that lymph nodes be positive. Both of those actually require that lymph nodes be positive also. But there may be single institutions that have smaller studies. A good resource for finding out information about clinical trials for individual indications is www.clinicaltrials.gov, which is sort of the National Institutes of Health clearinghouse for registered clinical trials.
And that actually is in your materials that you receive from Cancer Care. It's actually www.cancer.gov, which is the NCI site, and then the clinicaltrials.gov. So you actually would be able to call and really be more specific about your needs. So for everybody interested, you do want to use that as a wonderful resource. They also have an 800 number, 1-800 for cancer, and that's actually also in your materials as well, so that you can feel that you have additional resources. And we're very delighted that the audience, that all of you are interested in clinical trials, because that really is that's changed a lot. And I wonder if our speakers would address that. I think there was a time when people were reluctant about clinical trials, and now we're hearing that people really are interested in clinical trials. Dr. Walchuk and Dr. LaCouture, do you want to comment on that?
Yes.
Mary, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I would like to. I would like to emphasize the previous points about. I think things have changed considerably over the past decade or over the past several years, in which, as Dr. Walchuk mentioned, the treatment of melanoma has become more individualized or personalized. So, I think that when many people are treated in these clinical trials, the oncologists have studied these medicines and these cells from people so much that they know what is more suitable for each person to be utilized. So they really do a wonderful job of investigating things even before, if you will, they do the actual investigation. So I think it provides a great opportunity for people to participate in them. As I said before, I think most people feel very much carefully followed during their treatment. They feel that they will have rapid attention whenever they present with an unforeseen event. And obviously, they are not only will be able to help themselves, but they will also be able to help thousands or hundreds of thousands of people in upcoming years and decades that will also need these medicines.
Excellent. Thank you. And Dr. Walchak, did you want to add anything?
I think that's a really good description.
Yep. Excellent. Yeah. Wonderful team. Thank you both. And our next question.
Our next question comes from Harold G.
Yes, I read the article about this new drug, and in other articles also I've read that typically the prognosis is 6 to 9 months after melanoma travels to an organ. And, of course, we all know there are many examples of people living many years beyond that, and I was curious what enables these people to be different, and is their prognosis better as years go by?
Thank you, Harold. That's a very interesting question. I'm going to ask both of our speakers to address it because I think that Dr. Walchak, do you want to start?
Yeah, I actually tend to shy away from discussions of numbers of survival time frames because I plead ignorance, with my patients, saying that melanoma is way too unpredictable a disease. It's very quirky and heterogeneous, and some people who, you know, if you try to line up their history with a textbook, would look like they have a very poor predicted survival, go on to live a very long time. And I think that we as yet don't have, an ability to predict for an individual patient how prolonged their survival is going to be. And I think that's not just me trying to dodge a difficult question, because if we could answer it, it would be an important question to answer. But I think it's a way of maintaining hope, that there are no absolutes when it comes to the treatment of melanoma. The only thing we know is that there's a lot we don't know. However, I think that a lot of the information that's out there quoting different median survivals, and I think I'll actually quote the famous anthropologist Stephen Jay Gould, when he was confronted with his own malignancy, said that it's not about the median. A median is just a midpoint. There are a lot of people on either side of that. And just say that with new medicines, having a new medicine approved for melanoma for the first time in 13 years, hopefully another one on the way later this year, we are poised to really make significant changes to those textbook answers. So I consider that to be, fortunately, a moving target.
Thank you very much. Dr. Lukatura?
Yes, from my perspective, again, I think that was very clearly stated by Dr. Walchak, but I can only speak to the side effects, and I can say that so far with the drugs used against melanoma, there are no factors that have been identified that predict who will develop more severe side effects. Having said that, we do notice that people with increasing age and have a strong history of sun exposure may be, more susceptible to developing the secondary growths of the skin with the RAF inhibitors, or they may also be more susceptible, people that have fair skin, to the sensitivity to the sun caused by some of these drugs. In addition to this, people that have very fair skin with a little bit of redness on the face may also be more susceptible to develop the rash with most of these drugs that have been mentioned. But it may also be a consequence that people with fairer skin, whatever appears red is just more easily visible. In any event, we are carefully following people treated with these medicines so we can do exactly that. We are able to ascertain the risk of developing side effects so that the side effects that we do know that occur, we can in some cases, hopefully, treat them prophylactically or before they happen, and in other cases, treat them early on.
And that's such an important point in terms of people's quality of life. And could you both comment on just quality of life issues?
I think that they need to be taken very seriously. If you've got a treatment that, you know, prolongs someone's survival by a few weeks, but, you know, has a dramatic impact on their quality of life and, you know, makes them ill and in the hospital, then that's always got to be a significant consideration. And I'm very happy to say that most of the clinical trials that we now do here include very formal quality of life testing, in addition to all the safety and efficacy testing, because I think that many drug manufacturers and biotech companies are very interested in knowing not just how well the scans look, but how do people feel in their own opinion.
I completely agree with Dr. Walchuk's comment, and I have to say that one of the reasons that we have focused our efforts here at Sloan Kettering on treating side effects is precisely that, improving quality of life so that people can live better and longer, and also so that the treatments don't have to be discontinued or modified because of side effects that could otherwise be managed.
Well, I want to thank both of you. You've just been outstanding speakers. I also just an outstanding team, and we hope to do other programs with you speaking on them as well. And I also want to thank all of you who asked questions. Your questions really enhanced the call and allowed us to elaborate on other issues that your questions raised, and all of you who've been listening as well. Now, this is a one-hour program, and although it is about to end soon, I do want to remind all of you that if you didn't get to ask your question, that you can call Cancer Care. Our staff here are able to handle your questions. And also, I want to remind you that although the call is about to end soon, the services that you can access from Cancer Care, those do not end. And those go on endlessly. And I want to remind you all of what those services are. Cancer Care has a staff of 60 master's-level trained oncology social workers, and we're here to provide a host of services. From practical and financial assistance to supportive counseling, both on an individual basis or family basis. We also offer support groups on the telephone online, and we also offer all kinds of materials, fact sheets, and publications, as well, of course, as these Connect workshops, these telephone workshops that you can access. We have quite a few of these programs, and you can listen to them live, and they also are then on replay, both on telephone replay and as podcasts as well. Some of you may want to listen to the program again, and you certainly can do that as well. So most importantly, I would not want anyone to feel that you're alone when this call ends. I want you to now know that you're part of a community of support and that we are here to help you, really to provide support to you. And the services are free. So give us a call at 1-800-813-HOPE, or visit our website at www.cancercare.org. And I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a wonderful day.